¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
This is the Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Well, reporting has now confirmed what many of us have suspected in the Nancy Guthrie investigation. The initial team assigned to work the case, by really no fault of their own, the ones that they were assigned to, they lacked homicide experience. The sergeant supervising the response has reportedly never worked a homicide. Seasoned detectives were allegedly moved off the squad before the case even started, and sources inside the department say it was about loyalty, not merit. That's where the problem lies. The critical first hours of the abduction belong to who's ever in the room, and the people in that room may not have been ready for what walked through the door. That's where we're going to be starting today. Your questions in the comments section on Substack, YouTube, Facebook, X, wherever you're watching us. Be sure to leave them. We'll try to get to them. Joining us, as always, Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, my co-host. And it's a fun day. It's Friday fun day. Jennifer Coffendaffer is with us. So we have both perspectives in here today. Let's start, Jen. Sources saying that the sergeant who supervised the initial homicide response to Nancy Guthrie's home had never personally worked a homicide case and had only been a sergeant for about 6 months. Okay, I mean, everybody's got to start somewhere, I guess, but you don't want it to be your case. You're like, I don't want the rookie on this one. But when you hear that, Jen, I mean, what is the first thing that comes to your mind of concern of like, okay, rookie and like rookie mistake? Here's likely what could have been missed. What came to your mind when you heard that?
Well, as you said, this was something that seemed evident by what we saw. In other words, the crime scene being abandoned early and the mistakes made in regards to search parties being called off literally on day two. We saw the rookie mistakes come to light. And now we're hearing, of course, the source reporting that that's because he was a rookie. So as you said, as you opened with, I don't think any of us are surprised. And for me, I'm not surprised that Nanos made these calls because we've been hearing about how he chooses people not based on their abilities, but based on his relationship with them. And whenever you run a department like that, you're going to run into problems like this.
Yeah, my gosh, Jen. I mean, in every organization, because we had one of the comments, why aren't all departments trained in this type of investigation? You are. What happens typically, where Jen and I worked with the Bureau, is you always had a lead investigator that had all the experience. And even if the junior person came in and initially found it, got the tips, got the call, whatever it is, once it gets back to the squad area, it gets transferred to the senior guy, you become a support role until you are mentored, taught, and trained by those senior agents. And what it does is, typically, it makes you very hungry at a young age with a lot less experience because you want to be that guy. You want to be the person out in front. You want to be in charge because you now have all these reps of following in the footsteps of these great masters and Jedis in front of you. But Nanos destroyed that entire... It's so disappointing.
I mean, everybody, I'm trying to play devil's advocate here for a moment, and everyone knows I'm not a fan of Nanos, but everybody does have to start somewhere. I'm assuming, you know, the sergeant here that got was in charge only 6 months. Before that, they had worked their way up, probably under somebody, probably saw a lot of things, and then finally got the title. And you hope by the time you get the title, you got enough reps underneath you that, you know, yes, you're new to the position, but you're not new to that sort of work. Is that what's going on here? I don't know that we truly know the answer to that, but is this something where, obviously we haven't found Nancy yet, but where this looks worse on paper and it makes for a great headline more than it operationally is super deficient in the case. I don't know. Your thoughts, Jen?
Moni, I love this side of you. You're kind and gentle today. No! Find out and you believe this is an abduction, your first call has to be to the FBI, period, end of story. There's not even a check mark in the Pima County statistics that shows they've ever had an abduction, because they haven't, not in this vein. And second of all, even if you look at their homicides, remember, homicide is way different than murders. Mm-hmm. You look at murders, now you're also down on reps, as we're talking about
12 in 2025, I think it was, or 2024.
See, this is simple. Call the FBI, not 3 days later, not after you've processed the crime scene that, by the way, has only one time to ever be processed. After that, it's really mucked up. You got one chance at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just had no one out in front telling them what to do, you know, saying, hey. And so even if you have the junior guy in charge, there's always someone like right here saying, you know, kind of giving the nudges, you know, because that's you're right. You know, Tony, you know, good job on giving the grace and the positive aspect of this. But and granted, it could be going on, because, again, I'll do the same thing. I'll be kind, you know, because it's the lower levels that you want to support, because they're the ones doing the hard work. But it doesn't sound like they're doing what they should be doing, in the sense of there's no senior experience with reps with the junior guy that's leading this investigation. And what happens is you get the deer in the headlights and you hit fight or fright or freeze. They froze, it looks like, because there's a lot of things they should have done quicker.
What I guess what makes no sense to me about this whole damn thing, Nanos, in my opinion, seems kind of like an egomaniac. He likes the attention. He likes the spotlight on him. He and typically that's for good things. You want to be looked at as, okay, you're a hero. You're solving cases. You're doing this. You're doing that. His department actually has a fairly decent track record of solving homicides, yep. Although there's not many of them, but it's still there. It is what it is. Why? I mean, like, if at the end of the day, the people below you are going to be a reflection of your leadership, he should know that. He's been doing this 40-some years. I mean, why would you, in something that is truly, you know this is going to be a high-profile case because of who it is, why would you allow for that, putting somebody on this case that doesn't have the experience, when you do have other people that could handle it more efficiently, more professionally, with more experience? I know we go to the, and maybe this is the answer, the ego thing of, well, some of these people didn't support him, so this is all he has left. But at the end of the day, the reflection of the performance is going to come back at him. He knows it. Why would you be going out there with your weakest link, knowing eventually this will reflect back on you?
It's very simple. Control. He wanted to maintain control, which means he's going to put the people in charge that he can easily control, and that they side with him. And I can't wait to hear what Robin's take is on this. We really just didn't see that much in the Bureau, at least that I saw, personally working for matters. Mm-hmm. You know, you put your best, the best, and sometimes those guys and gals didn't necessarily jive with the supervisor, but the supervisor knew, let them run. Let them run. We'll wheel them back in if we need to, but let the horses run. I don't remember having anything like this, really.
No, and I'm with you, Jen. And I'm not the, you know, rah-rah Bureau guy. You know, I'm very pragmatic about rights, wrongs, and everything else. But when it came to this kind of stuff, whether it's the criminal side or my side, national security, yeah. I mean, it actually, as a junior agent, it made you really, really frustrated, because you felt like you had the reps after 5, 6, 7 years that you could take lead on this. But again, if the big one came in, it went to the senior person on that squad with all the experience in that particular area. And then if you're lucky and you were a good support person supporting the lead, they'd allow you to be part of it. And then they would test you. Well, we'll give you this to do. And if you can keep your mouth shut, not complain and do this a good job, we'll give you a little bit more responsibility. So they're constantly doing a really good job. And that's not just Bureau. That's everywhere typically does that. And Jen, great point on Nanos. It's about control, right? And also, Tony, I didn't know the timeline you mentioned. He might have gotten rid of all the good people before this happened, thinking that, hey,
nothing. Demoted many of them.
Yeah, so think about it. If he's got his mind, nothing ever big happens here. I'll just maintain control, and then boom, and then what happens? Something big. So he don't have anyone left.
I mean, is this, the word that I overuse all the time, narcissistic, but I mean, is this just a narcissistic move where, I mean, did he, pure conjecture and speculation, but is this something where he did see an opportunity? There's going to be a lot of spotlights on this. I can't believe that he didn't think that there's going to be a lot of spotlights on this, although who knows? He doesn't seem to be the brightest bulb. But let's say he did see it coming. Was this a play of let's put somebody out there who may not be the best, and then as we know, a lot of narcissists, they like to knock the blocks down and build them back up and go, look at me, I'm saving the day. I'm wondering if this is some sort of a calculation quietly in the back of his mind of, we're going to let this person fail and then I'm going to step in, you're going to see me in the spotlight and I'm going to answer the questions much better than they ever could. All for the ego play. Maybe that's a bit too deep, but I don't know.
It might be deep. For Nanos, I think it was.
Yeah.
He's not a deep thinker, right?
I think it was a little simpler than that. I really think it just came down to, listen, I'm going to put you in charge because you're a yes man. You're new. I'm going to have total control. I'm not going to have to worry about argument back and forth about decisions that are being made because they're going to be my decision. And, you know, that's the last thing you want, by the way. You want people on your team that are going to push back some on the things that they feel strong. Yeah. About that you can cut up. That's what we call it. We cut it up and we look at it and we're, you know, the person that might be the case agent and they might have 2, 3 up to 10 was the largest amount of agents I had assigned to a case.
Yep.
You cut it up and you work through it. And oftentimes I know as a case agent, I'm like, you know what? You're right. Let's switch direction on this or let's try this. That's how it should work.
We did it all the time on the behavior team too. Exactly like that. Whether you're a team leader or fell in another role, whether it's on your squad, I mean, it is literally a team effort to do that. I think it's overconfidence played in too, because we keep talking about his narcissistic tendencies control. Part of that, I think, is because of all his time there, he's overconfident. He probably thought this thing is an easy case to solve, maybe.
Mm. What damage has been done by these decisions? And is there any rectifying it? Is there any way of correcting any of this at this point? Jen, what's your thoughts?
Well, first of all, you can never get a crime scene back. Second of all, you can never get the first 48 back. Mm. Third of all, Nancy's gone. Still no idea where she went, what happened to her. And number four, we have no pointer on a subject. So that's your answers to all of that, I think. And then I'll go one step further, which nobody's really talking about. And this is why I hate to see this. I cringe when I see this, not because of the reporters again, but because of the message. This is such fodder for a defense team.
Really good point.
But will there ever be justice in this case? Because you think the social media hounds are on this and the creators? Oh my gosh, wait till we see a defense team when now they've got 100 reasons why the guy that probably is the guy that they're going to end up arresting isn't the guy.
Well, just the debacle of the gloves. You know, who is one of the glove a perpetrator glove or is it a glove of an ERT agent? I mean, just the glove debacle for one thing. You're right. I mean, just the handling of the crime scene because of how it's handled at the onset. Now, that's going to be a lot of fodder. Oh my gosh! Yeah,
I mean,
this whole thing is like ripping the rug of hope out, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, didn't the glove turn out to be like somebody that worked at a restaurant down the road or something?
Yep.
It's like
there's 16 gloves though, and I saw an interview. And I can't remember what date it was because he's done a lot. Even after he stopped his pressers, he still was, you know, interviewing with NBC and the local affiliate where he said that wasn't even the glove. You got to watch it where he's like, that's not even the glove, something like that. In other words, not the glove everybody's been talking about. There were 16 gloves, everyone.
Does he even know what glove? I mean, at the end of the day, does he even know what one it was? Here's a thought I had on the glove, with it being the guy from the restaurant. I'm going to guess this guy has reps in throwing gloves out his window every day. I'm guessing after he leaves the restaurant as a line cook or whatever he's doing, gets in his car, rolls down the window, takes him off, boom. It's probably a pattern. That might be why there's 16 gloves from 16 or 8 different dinner surfaces. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's just maddening. The fact that there's really no levers to pull for repercussion on poor decision making by leadership in these sort of positions. Is that a flaw in our system? Do we have a system that relies too much on people doing the right thing, being professional, being good, doing the right thing? And we also then rely on our citizens to pick the right person as well. Is this something that maybe should be re-examined, because we end up with a lot of folks like this in these sort of positions, and everybody's like, how did this happen? You chose them. That's how. You didn't pay enough attention, and you picked the person.
You know, Tony, at the end of the day, you said it. He was chosen. He was elected. And the amount of power in these sheriff's offices, it's very different than the Bureau.
Yeah.
Where there's a lot of checks and balances. This is, you are all powerful, really. You're kind of like the SAC, I guess, in a field office. So the head of that field office is pretty much all powerful.
Mm-hmm. But still accountable. They can still be removed. We've seen it. And that's, I'm with you, Jen. You know, he's got too much power as an elected official in charge of this, and you can't remove. I mean, if this happened inside the Bureau, and I'm so sorry, Jen, I totally jumped on you on that one. But it's so accurate. He can't be removed. Like, so if this was inside the Bureau and you had a couple of case agents, too young, assigned to a case, I can guarantee you, I don't care what program it is, they won't be doing that again anytime soon. The supervisor's going to be having a good talk to, it might be shifted squads between what they do. I mean, there is always repercussions, especially if it's an outward focus case, and if it's going to not just impact the case, but the reputation of organization, which goes to that feeling of you can trust the organization to do right. All those things matter when it comes to optics as well as execution. So there would be major shakeups inside of the Bureau if that happened.
Let me give you one example really quick, Tony, and Robin, is if you look at the New Orleans case.
Yes, I know. Yep, that's what I was thinking of. Go ahead. Yep, go ahead.
ASAC, she got on there and she said, I mean, despite all the information that was out there, the banners waving, ISIS, everything that was known, she said, well, this isn't necessarily a terroristic event, when basically you just needed a pulse to sort of see that. She could have just said it a little bit differently and maybe gotten away with it. She was plucked out of there so fast it made your head spin.
Yep.
Because you said when it comes to a public reflection of the Bureau and not looking like you know what you're talking about, you're gone.
Yeah, and they sent the DAD down, a deputy assistant director, I think, from headquarters to handle that until they got someone new in there. I remember that very specifically because we're all watching like this. Oh my God, did she just say that? And they fixed it.
I wanted to help her. I was like, oh.
That's what happens when you get called in over, because that was New Year's Eve, right?
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you put somebody who is new and a novice and doesn't have experience in that role.
Brand new ASAC.
Brand new ASAC.
Yeah, it's. I think it's one of those things that the general public gets shocked by, but it's how the system is working as designed right now. The system needs fixing, and that's ultimately, great, I think, point. What the solution is to something like that. We can complain about it all day and how this is, but at the end of the day, that's why people vote, and that's why people need to pay attention.
And that's a good question for both of you. Why are there sheriffs that are elected? I don't understand why some organizations, they're appointed, but like the town council, and then others, they're elected. I mean, why? I just, because every time there's an elected official, this seems to really go sideways sometimes. Haven't we seen a good one?
Well, I think one issue is, and, you know, I'll use the Bureau. You have to, in my opinion, And thank goodness the number two at the Bureau came up this way, because I'm affiliated with him from time back in Houston. But you have to have somebody that came up through the ranks, earned their way, made their mistakes, made their bones, and then comes up. And typically, the best people are people that never want to get into management. And yeah, they decide to, for whatever reason, either they're coaxed into it by upper management, or they're just like, oh my God, I cannot work for this idiot who has 3 years in and now he's my supervisor. So I got to make a move here. Something like that. But yeah, you know, my point is it happens.
And that's why Louis Freeh was such a good director for us too, because he spent time as an agent first, what he's like 10 or 12 years before he went to private sector. So, I mean, he was a great director. He's in, I think with you too, right? Jen, when you came in.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, Louis. Yes. He was
beloved.
And this is the type of guy he was. I got a quick personal story. So he was coming through the DFW airport. At that time, I had responsibility. I was the SRA there. And when he came through, normally all the directors have this huge SWAT contingent.
Right.
He didn't want that. Like, he was carrying his, might have even been a revolver back then. No, it wasn't. It wasn't. We were 10 millimeter. So anyway, they assigned me to be his bodyguard. Just me. He didn't want anybody else. He didn't even really want me. Talk about an agent's agent. This was an agent's agent. And that's what you got to have. Although Sheriff Nanos, he came through the ranks. I will say that.
Yeah.
He,
something happened. fell in love with his own story.
Look at the Duggars. There's a lot, 19 kids that came out of the house. You know, some are good, some are not. You know,
someone goes sideways. Yeah, pretty bad.
Speaking of which, your thoughts in the comment section on this, on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Nancy Guthrie and the Bitcoin. Fresh ransom notes have been hitting TMZ recently. One Bitcoin demanded, half for information, half after the arrest. $1.2 million reward through legitimate channels has also moved absolutely nothing. Still no name suspect. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, joining myself and Robin Drake to break down some of the latest here. I know you had a conversation earlier this week on your channel over on Break the Case about the Bitcoin, about being able to trace Bitcoin ransoms, on how they work, how they function. Can this be done? As a layperson over here, we've seen it in the past. We've seen Colonial Pipeline, Caesars. They've been able to track this sort of thing to a degree in real time when they've had ransom demands on their systems and figure out, okay, we pay the ransom. They track down who did it and they get their money back. It's probably far more complex and not as easy as that. But Jen, what have you found out in your research and your conversations that you've had about these Bitcoin demands and just how difficult they may be to track down or not? And I think
we just lost her again.
No,
because she asked the question.
Because she is like Guthrie Queen.
Yes.
She's doing a lot of work on this stuff. The tracking through the Bitcoin and poking at the system is what she's really been pressing the sheriff, pressing a system, pressing, and it's confusing. That's why, you know, hopefully she can come back and comment on this, because, you know, and she said this during the last show, when you have the ability to do something, because the Bureau has resources, the Guthries have resources, and even said online and in social media that they're willing to pay for information just to get their mother back, and really in any kind of condition, why wouldn't you take a swing at it? And that's what I'm kind of curious about, especially when you have the ability to do some sort of tracking. And again, you just play the law of averages. So say you lose it. Mm-hmm. It's still intelligence you get. You know, we would invest in the Bureau a lot of time, a lot of energy, and do a cost-benefit analysis of the money we're going to invest in this for the intelligence we're going to get out of it. So I'm curious why they're not as well. Maybe they know something we don't know.
Doubtful.
Well, I mean, I'm not super well versed in how Bitcoin works. I don't. I have very little of it in my investment portfolio, and I've never bought a damn thing in the world with it. I know there's ways that you can do that, but is it really that untraceable? Is it? I mean, I know there have been ways where it has been traced, and I guess to a layperson, that's the question that I think a lot of us have: is like, well, if you can kind of trace it over here in some possible factions, why can't you over here in this? If you have, and not just the average Joe doing it, the full force of the United States government and their ability to track something like this, is it really that impossible to do? And it is simply the fear of losing $36,000 all that's holding anyone back from pulling that lever, I guess?
And that's what's interesting to me, Tony, because okay, so what I do when I do the calculations when I'm in the world of intelligence is, let's just write off the fact that we're going to lose it. We're going to lose track of it. Mm-hmm. And so, all right, so if we write that off, if you're going for the intelligence, if you can actually garner some sort of intelligence on where she might be, why wouldn't you take a swing at that? So I would actually go for the end result, hoping you might get – so I, in other words – we're kind of talking about plan A would be to track the Bitcoin. Yeah. And plan B is to find Nancy. Now, I'm reversing it. Plan B is to figure track the Bitcoins. I think that's harder than trying to center on, all right, let's get some actionable intel, because as of what we know in the public right now, we have zero. Mm-hmm. And even if it garners another response, even if it gets someone to poke their head up somewhere, it's one more thing we have to track down, unless for some reason they are inundated with a lot more leads than we know about right now, because I think there's not much they're working with.
You know, that's what I guess I'm wondering about is, you know, we're hearing a handful of stories of, okay, there's a Bitcoin demand here over at TMZ. There's a Bitcoin demand over here at whatever. We're just hearing about a couple of them. When somebody knows that this is kind of the modality that are being demands are coming from in a case like this, you're going to get your copycats, and you're going to get everybody from some, you know, Yahoo on their computer in their mother's basement doing this, you know, all the way to maybe the actual person who has true information. How do you know who has what? You can't go pay every Bitcoin wallet $36,000 and hope for the best. And then how do you truly decipher who has information when that individual, even if they may have the information, doesn't have anything to prove to you that they are that much closer to the actual facts than anybody else?
That's what makes this so challenging, stupid to me.
Yeah.
Because, all right, so if we go back to, I know there's two main leading theories out there. Basically, the main thrust is something in the house was targeted. She was abducted from the house for either panic escalation because you're going for something else in a house and she dies along the way, or you went into the house to get her. But either way, you're trying to profit from something in that house, either her herself or something else. Or I'm sorry, the third theory is just to terrorize Savannah by making it personal. Okay, so with that in place, I'm still thinking that I still from the get go, and this is why I love having Jennifer on, because you know we have all these different theories about what could be, and she is all in on, you know, it was targeted for Nancy and that these ransom notes are real. I'm bought in if that's the truth. But here's a challenge with it. If it was the truth, why aren't they pulling the trigger and doing it? Unless you go on to the other side of the coin, where I'm at on the ransom note side, was I think the ransom notes were frauds.
Yeah.
Some of them, I would say, because I know there's some things going on with some of the notes with some religious overtones maybe, and they might be. In other words, we got a lot of notes. And so to your point, which one do you respond to? I think some of them are very indeed coming from the Prince of Algeria, looking for your $1 billion, and all you got to do is give him $500 million first.
Well, it's interesting, you know, if some of them carry, and this is just pure speculation here, so whoever's going to run with this as a story, understand that. If there is a pattern here of religiosity in some specific notes, a kind of track of like, okay, these notes seem to come together. Like these mm-hmm. might be from a similar group. That still doesn't mean it's from the kidnapper. It just means yes. it's from someone who's consistently sending in the same level of madness. And there is a theory that's gaining some traction right now that some of the notes contain or may contain, I should say, scripture. And that the person behind them may see themselves as holy, someone who gets off on control, not money. That would explain why the family's public appeals have landed so heavily on religious language. And it would explain why the Bitcoin wallet has sat empty for weeks. If the money was never the point, how long is somebody like that willing to hold on? And does that change the window the Bureau is actually working inside? But if money's not the thing and it's all religious, why would that person be writing letters demanding Bitcoin? I guess it almost contradicts itself in the same way. But if we were to take the Bitcoin out of it, and because some of these notes, I believe, just had messages, didn't have a Bitcoin connection to it, just religiosity in them, allegedly. And if this is about control and it's not about money, and it's more so about watching the Today Show and then leaking some information out to somebody, and suddenly, oh, look, Savannah's not on that interview anymore. She suddenly was pulled away live on television. I mean, there's a level of control there that some asshole may be sitting somewhere going, I made that happen. People get off on weird shit. And if they can see them having a level of control of doing something like that, pulling a live television lever from wherever they're at, or then pulling the lever of emotions with this family and their tweets and their responses that they put out online, they're getting a reaction. They're able to connect directly with that celebrity that otherwise has gatekeepers in front of them, but they're able to do it because they did something so extreme. Sometimes it's just for the joy of that. And that's the sick, scary part. And that's the part where we may never actually find out who the hell did this, if that's the goal.
I totally get that and see it as a possibility. And just like all the other theories, though, all right, so let's go down that road, mm-hmm. then why isn't there more? So if you have a message of religiosity, or if you mm-hmm. have some doctrine, if you have some poking you want to do, or you have some control you're trying to exercise, we're seeing a little bit of it. But there's so much more they could do if that was the end goal. Why? In other words, if you have a message inside of the ransom notes or the notes that you're sending to TMZ, they're not getting aired. So if there's a message in there you want to be aired, why wouldn't you find another outlet that would air the entire thing or another way to put it out there? So, okay.
No, I think they are. I think they're attempting that right now.
Right, honestly. But I know, it's the tempo that I'm not getting on this one, because people that are trying to gauge and control an action or control things tend to want to have a higher tempo, a return of their investment of taking risk. And but it's not quite all the way there is what I'm saying.
But I think there's also, I think we might almost be overthinking it a little bit too.
I think so.
We're thinking that there's some sort of end goal here, that it is to get Savannah to do something or to get money or to get whatever. It might just be somebody with some sort of extreme delusional religiosity going on that really enjoys poking animals with sticks. I mean, when you're at the zoo and you're looking at, not that you're poking animals with sticks at a zoo, but let's for a second, for the sake of argument, say that you're poking an animal with a stick at a zoo. Let's say you're five and have that sort of mentality. You're not sitting there going, I'm going to poke the animal with a stick, with any sort of greater goal of like, I hope it sleeps well tonight, or I hope it goes, eats more food. No, you're just going for the reaction at that moment. And then you walk away to the next exhibit because your brain is just firing every which way. And you're a kid. I'm wondering if that's kind of what's going on here. There isn't a greater goal. There's not a greater good. There's not a greater goal. There's nothing. It's some asshole that is delusional as hell, thinks that they're communicating with, they're somehow communicating and moving people in some way, shape, or form by poking his family with a stick is somehow, it's fulfilling to them. And that's all they need. They're getting fulfilled by something. Not that there's a greater goal, but they're whatever they're hungry for, they're getting fed it.
So I like the thought process, Tony. So the intent I was speaking about earlier was the intent was to profit by something in that house. But we keep seeing incongruencies between that intent and actions, which keep not adding up. That's why you said we're overcomplicating it when we're doing that. So if the intent wasn't to make profit off of Nancy, because that went sideways. If the intent wasn't to profit off of taking something of material value out of the house, because that went sideways, mm-hmm. What was the intent? Well, according to your theory, the intent is to just to keep poking the bear forever. Which now, and so here's a great analogy for that. Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, he had an intent and a manifesto of trying to get rid of technology in the world by blowing people up. But his intent was never to stop. His intent was to get better at it and just keep doing it. Mm-hmm. And so that's an interesting, because remember, always trying, it's never motive, as John Douglas talks about. Motive is something that we like to say in the press and the media and all that, but it's always about understanding. That's why I keep coming back to that word intent. And every time we're dealing with this Guthrie case, we can't quite keep lining the intent that we think it is up with the actions we're seeing. Yeah. But your theory out there, actually it lines up better than anything else I've heard so far. And actually, and also, I think, I'm sorry to cut you off, and I think Coffendeffer's, you know, Jen's great work on that poking at Nancy is definitely a huge answer and supporting that intent of the eternal purgatory they're trying to put the family in, because that it could be a never ending without an end state of something that we're looking at, material gain, Bitcoin gain. That's why it's not gaining traction. It's just one way to keep that attention and poke it.
I'm wondering if the true person who's behind this has anything to do still with any of these ransom notes, or if it's someone who just saw an opening, opportunity to start playing that role and to be taken as seriously as if they were this, and they're doing it. I mean, there's the simplistic, innocent childhood version of it where it's a prank call, you know, and as a kid, you laugh at it and you get some excitement out of it. Somebody believed that this was crazy. I remember I used to prank the competing radio station across town with fake cancellations when there were storms. Now, Todd's
laughing. You've got Todd going.
Tony.
I would be like, the R lady of basted chicken or the R lady of eternal damnation is canceling their basted chicken roast today because of the storm. Okay, we'll get that on. And then they would air it. And I got extreme joy. It was funny. But that was innocent and stupid. This is someone's life. This is someone's mother. This is someone's well-being. This is someone's very existence. But I'm not saying that those same sort of levers or that same sort of fucked up enjoyment that you get from making a thing like that couldn't also be bastardized in someone's brain and be so cognitively distorted that there's people getting their jollies out of this sort of shit too.
Tony, I think out of everything we've covered so far, this makes the most sense to me, believe it or not, because if you wanted to, I mean, because this person's got away with this.
Yeah.
And the reason why most people get caught is because they're trying to profit. The intent is to profit in some way, and the attempt to profit is what always trips them up. But if you're not trying to profit, you're just trying to poke. You control the tempo of when you want to poke, and since it doesn't this makes so much sense. It's all falling in place. They were never looking for two-way communication. Remember, it's always one way. And anytime you do, and so let's just assume all the ransom notes are accurate or real, which I don't think. But the original ones that came in, which they think were, at least that's what Nancy, Savannah said, and some others have said, I think even Jen maybe, none of them actually gave away for two-way communication, which hasn't happened. And so remember, I keep going back to the stats saying, well, that can't be that, because the stats say every single case, there's got to be two-way communication, but this one wasn't. And so what fits, no two-way communication needed? The poke, without the need for profit. They just want to get the attention to keep poking.
Some people just like the poke.
It's very interesting. I'm going to re-examine a few things on this one. Yeah. And what I love about it, too, it totally supports what Jen's been saying the entire time about retribution towards Savannah or the family in some way. Yes-ish. I think they it might have been personal towards them, but it definitely created an opportunity for someone that was public, who's someone's mother, who they knew where they lived. In other words, it might have been targeted towards them, or it might have just been target of opportunity for them for this need they had in their lives to have some, again, celebrity notoriety is a huge reason why a lot of morons do stupid things. Yep. And this is, I mean, look at the celebrity notoriety they're getting out of this. They are, like you said, they're controlling a narrative at their tempo. All yep. they have to do to get attention is put a little more trickle out there without even, and it doesn't require two-way communication, which keeps them safe.
And that person may or may not have anything to do with Nancy. It may just be somebody who found a lever and is getting some joy out of doing this.
You're right. It might not have been the first one. It could have been someone who came along and just riding the coattails.
Two totally different crimes being committed, in my opinion. I don't
know. Torture is what it is.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's somebody who it gets joy. It's very sadistic type thinking. I mean, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts. Check it out. This is Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me. It's available wherever you get books. Go check it out. Jennifer Coffendaffer, check out her channel on YouTube and on Substack, Break the Case. And you can hear that conversation that she had recently with an expert about Bitcoin. And it's like an hour and a half. It really dives deep. So I do highly recommend checking that out if you're trying to get full
including
context.
The video for David and putting and getting in the trial. I mean, looking at Jennifer's stuff before you listen to our show is always a great move, just like Bob Mata.
Yeah, go check it out. All right. We'll continue our conversation in the comments section. Until then, and until next time, for Jen, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.